Hi, I'm Niall Kennedy. I'm at Six Apart, and I'm doing a podcast about widgets with Bern Reese. Bern was formerly the product manager of TypePad, where they had TypePad widgets for a while. Bern's also a plugin developer and developed the Sidebar Manager plugin, which later was integrated with Movable Type, and is involved with the developer community here at Six Apart, making sure that everyone out there that wants to build widgets can be integrated with all of the different platforms across the four different blogging products. So, hi, Bern.
Hi, Niall.
Do you want to introduce yourself any further?
No, I am now the product manager for Movable Type. So yes. I am heading the kind of current development of Movable Type, as well as heading up development of the next major version of Movable Type, codenamed Athena.
Okay. So talking about widgets, TypePad very early on had the widget functionality to be able to change something in your sidebar, drag around a specific module, and have that in place. And I think part of the reason is the design of the user accounts and the ability to go in and edit the actual source code versus the drag and drop type of interface that was present in the TypePad product. So how do widgets in the package form differ from just inserting something into the core of the page itself?
Well, there were two primary levels of customers with TypePad, and they fall into two groups. One are a set of customers who want complete control over everything about their blog, all the way down to the HTML. And for those users, widgets are available to them, certainly, but the process is about editing the HTML. For example, one of the most popular and ubiquitous sidebar widgets is Google AdSense. So for those users, it's a matter of cutting and pasting JavaScript directly into the HTML of their blog. For other users, that's a very intimidating process. Just looking at HTML is mind-boggling to them. They get really confused. Many of the editors you make it really difficult just to read HTML.
Mm-hmm.
And for those users, they end up just throwing up their hands and giving up. They don't know what to do. And from a support standpoint as well, it's very costly to support those customers because they're so emotional about, A, wanting the feature, and B, being frustrated that it's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
From a product management perspective, really what motivated TypePad's development of the widget feature over anything else was looking at all of the feature requests that were coming for customers. And at the end of the day, we were like, we could build all of these features, or we could outsource the development of those features, because there was a convergence at the time between, customers wanting all the features, and now all of a sudden, a real abundance of service providers out there on the internet providing this capability in one shape, form, or another. So we said, well, let's just outsource that problem altogether. Let's not spend our engineering resources developing each discrete feature, supporting it, iterating it over time. Let's just outsource the development of all of those features.
And since you've opened it up, what have you seen as the most popular widgets on the TypePad platform? What do people like to see on their sidebar?
A lot of it is syndication. A lot of it is RSS feeds. A lot of it is advertising. TypePad, I think, is a special platform because it's a paid, it's a subscription-based product. People are much more invested in a more professional level in their blog. You see, I mean, certainly TypePad's kind of niche is professional bloggers, small to medium-sized businesses, and in some cases, large businesses. One of the things all of those customers have in common is the desire for revenue, mm-hmm. generating revenue for their blog. So for that, it's advertising. Is probably the most popular.
Is it a pretty self-start program? I've seen some press releases where it announces a new partnership with Six Apart, which is actually a TypePad widget. So is this something that a biz dev team from one company needs to talk to the biz dev team of Six Apart, or is this a self-serve program?
We do have a special relationship with Widgetbox. They are proprietor of something like 500 widgets that they've developed that provide everything from, again, RSS feeds all the way to the ability to rate pages with on your blog. So rating the blog itself, rating individual posts. So much more kind of functional, behavioral related, not data related widgets.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this is not something typically that that one needs to engage the business end of Six Apart for. When we built out TypePad widgets, we did it specifically with the desire to reduce the administrative overhead of getting people on board. So TypePad's API was engineered specifically around making it as simple as possible. If you know how to code HTML, you don't need to know JavaScript, you don't need to know XML, you don't need to know any special syntax. If you can, if you have a widget that you like to syndicate through your own service, if you can just encapsulate that code into a form post and post it to TypePad, TypePad can take over that process for the user and allow the user to drag and drop that widget directly onto their blog.
Right. So a lot of the widget posting originates on a partner site. So it'll be, if eBay wanted, for example, to have a TypePad widget, that would be a special eBay page where they'd click a button and say, add this to TypePad. And by sending that form over to your server with the right configuration inside of these hidden input fields, you would be able to place something inside the user sidebar very easily.
Correct. And there are two primary places where users typically find widgets. One is from the service provider's site. So it is really the impetus or the spark is a user exploring the internet on their own, finding a service provider and think, oh, I'd really like to see this, you know, functionality on my blog. Oh, I have a TypePad blog. Click here. The other is users who are actively in TypePad, who are in the process of designing their blog and are thinking, what are the new features? What cool things can I add to my blog to make it a more exciting, compelling place to my readers? And they're browsing within TypePad. It's like, well, I know I want this RSS feed, and I know I want these kind of standard TypePad components. Oh, here's a widget directory. So then they branch off in the widget directory and they can browse a list of, and with Widgetbox, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of widgets they can choose from.
Are those pretty similar behaviors in Europe and Japan, the same kind of flow for widgets, or is that custom?
In regards to the feature set for TypePad, it's completely the same.
The way you'd browse a widget directory would be pretty much the same as well?
The widget directory is published only in English.
Okay.
Where you have service providers who have functionality within that have been localized to specific countries or languages, that capability is there as well. Obtaining an API key for the widget directory as a service provider who wants to provide a widget is done directly through TypeKey. So you can very easily get a widget API key and develop widgets on your own. If you wanted to develop a really simple listen to Niall's podcast widget. I mean, if you can just create a little flash code that enables that player, you could have that and plug directly into our widget directory overnight.
Great. And from your work inside of TypePad, Sidebar Manager was born as a plugin.
It was. The code was actually lifted right out of TypePad. I worked with Walt Dickinson, who's the kind of lead UI engineer on TypePad, and he helped me adapt the TypePad drag and drop interface, and I lifted it. I just put an empty wrapper around it, and reutilize within Movable Type a capability that was already there called template modules, which were modules which are intended to be included by other templates.
Right.
So I just overloaded that functionality and added a drag and drop ability with modules, and that was Widget Manager. It became very popular really quickly, and it was popular with two people, A, users looking for functionality, and two, all the service providers and companies who constantly are knocking down our door going, I want some way to get into your products. I have a service. Your audience is my audience. I want to leverage your ability to reach those people. And those conversations before we really had widget programs were so heavyweight. It was always engaging biz dev. And we just didn't have the bandwidth for it. But once we created these programs that allowed these companies to interface with our customers without having to go through our business arm, it really opened up doors for us. It opened up doors for them. It became much easier for everyone involved.
Now, one of the ways that Movable Type differs from the hosted TypePad service is you can create plugins. And so a user can add pieces of Perl code that can then create new template tags and therefore become a plugin plus widget configuration. Have you seen much of that?
There's a lot of, I think, education that really the Movable Type team needs to do with the community to help kind of really foster, I think, development patterns and design patterns around getting them used to that step of the development process. People think within Movable Type, more and more people are building applications within Movable Type, whether it's a statistics program or an Amazon Media Library management tool, getting them to take that functionality and helping users extend that functionality into the blog space is something we certainly need to kind of provide more examples for. There are tools, Feeds App Lite, developed by Tim Apnel, has a really one-step easy click here to create a widget for this plugin. Media Manager also has a widget wizard. And the form is very similar to what you see in other platforms, what you see in TypePad, which is, I want to configure this widget. I want to show five items from my Amazon library. I want to show the price. I want to show, and you can kind of configure the display, and then it produces the code for you, puts it in your blog, and then you can drag and drop it.
Let's talk about Media Manager a little bit, because that's one of your plugins.
Yeah.
And that's integrated with the sidebar and allows people to see what's going on. So explain, what is Media Manager, and how do people typically use that plugin?
Media Manager, one of the other names we toyed with was movable type lists. So TypePad has the ability for you to have a sidebar module that lists books you're reading, DVDs you're watching, music you're listening to. I wanted to provide that same capability within movable type. So it interfaces with Amazon's complete product catalog, allows you to search the catalog, and then maintain as many queues as you want. They're called queues within movable type, lists of things you're listening to, products you're just interested in. So that provides, you know, those sidebar capabilities. Other users are actually using Media Manager as virtual storefronts for their movable type blog. I don't know if you're familiar. I'm sure you're familiar with Mighty Girl and Mighty Goods. She doesn't use, that's the kind of preeminent use case for Media Manager. What I would really love to see people using Media Manager for more of is to maintain those catalogs. So people who are doing lots of reviews of items and writing about those items and driving traffic and commerce around those items. That's what Media Manager is chiefly designed for.
Yeah, one of the flows that people have with that is they get in a new book, so they're able to add something to their library, and then once they actually read the book, they attach a review to that.
Right.
And they can put it out there, and then some people can even sell that used book.
And that's it, and that's exactly what Media Manager does. So once you're in your library, I can say post a review. It adds a nice little toolbar to your entry screen, which allows you to modify the image and configure how you want the image to be displayed in conjunction with your post. Rate the image, rate the item, write a review, publish it, and it does all the formatting of the post for you.
With a program like Amazon, you are able to tap into an affiliate program, and you're able to add a key there. So whether it's going to be a Six Apart hosted module, and that's going to be a Six Apart code, or you as an individual developer can add your own individual code. And I think in your case, you've opened up in the settings to people changing that affiliate code.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is one of the most interesting user behaviors. We see this in TypePad as well, which is how few people actually change the defaults. Now, my monetization strategy around Media Manager and Six Apart is nice enough to let me do this, because at the end of the day, it's actually not that much money. But by default, I put in my Major Dojo Amazon ID. That's my personal associates account. Exposed through the interface, I allow people to override that setting and change that on a system-wide setting or on a blog-by-blog basis setting. I earn around probably $60 a quarter.
Pretty good.
Based on just people who are using Media Manager but aren't changing the default. So for them, their primary motivation for using Media Manager is the functionality itself. It has nothing to do with monetization. It has nothing to do with trying to create revenue stream for their blog.
On top of that, you open up some of your plugins and widgets to donations. Has that been at all successful for people to give you $5, $10?
To be honest, no, not really. And I think that's true in the movable type community as well. Movable type is unique in that the nature of the app really kind of lends itself to people who are really trying to monetize the platform. We create a professional network. These are people who are professional consultants whose, you know, sole source of revenue is consulting on building out movable type blogs. For them, being able to monetize software is something they would love to do, but the reality in the space is that user expectation, customer expectation, and market expectation is all of this stuff is our commodities. It should be free.
Mm-hmm.
So plugins, and this is largely has to do, I think, with also the open source open source culture, is that no, people are nice. Some people are nice, and they throw me a couple bucks every once in a while, but for the most part, you know, they just use the software for free, which is totally cool by me. It's donationware.
Mm-hmm.
It is open source in conjunction. But no, that creating plugins, creating widgets, and trying to sell widgets, there's not, in my experience, much of a market there.
So what do you think is the monetization for widgets? Is it the publisher that is putting these out and wanting to monetize the destination clicks? Or how are we going to make money?
It's about reach and exposure and brand exposure and functionality exposure.
Okay.
It's about, because widgets, I think, are a loss leader in that companies are going to invest time and energy into building widgets.
Yep.
They're not going to see a lot of direct revenue from in return of that engineering effort. A lot of it is about, I have a weather service, and I have premium features that I sell on top of that,
mm-hmm.
but I want to make it as easy as possible for people to take that content and syndicate it out and gain exposure for my brand. You'll see most of the widgets don't provide the capability for you to suppress the look and feel. You know, when you deploy a widget to your blog, mm-hmm. the look and feel of that widget is largely determined by the widget provider themselves. Why? Because they want their logo there. They want certain links that are taking you back to the service provider, because that's the primary value. It's about exposure. It's about, reaching our audience. Why people come to Six Apart is, again, they want their brand on associated with TypePad. They want it in our widget directory. They want to gain exposure. One of the greatest values that we have and that we offer widget providers is exposure within our widget directory.
So you mentioned about the packaging and getting your unique brand and all of that, but I think it's also possible to take that content and integrate really well with the templates that are already there. So making sure that it's going to flow well with the default Six Apart template that is across tens of millions of blogs.
Right, and that's a function of best practices. So we actually document that on our developer site. We say, here's the API, and then here are best practices.
Mm-hmm.
So if what we do is when we instruct widget developers on how to best develop their widget, we say, if you just simply wrap your widget with this very simple HTML, that allows your widget to take on the style characteristics of your blog,
mm-hmm.
to the extent that you're using Flash and other technologies that are kind of independent of CSS. We obviously have no control over that, but we do allow, but we don't enforce anything. That really is up to the experience the widget provider
sure.
wants to give their users.
Is there any type of widgets available on LiveJournal?
LiveJournal, so historically, there's two answers. Historically, LiveJournal has a user base that is incredibly security conscious. For that reason, no widgets mm-hmm. at all. Most of the widgets people are interested in deploying in the LiveJournal space are Flash, JavaScript. And again, because it's a hosted product and because there are so many security concerns, LiveJournal took the most conservative stance possible, which was no widgets.
Mm-hmm.
Within the last year, with the need to provide advertising on specific journals, as well as working with sponsors who are interested in putting a Flash player for a movie trailer or a soundtrack, LiveJournal developed a really interesting technique where you could register within the system and create a signature for a specific piece of JavaScript code, and you could whitelist that JavaScript code. Thereby, you could actually embed JavaScript within the app. The way LiveJournal worked is templates or themes actually get compiled, and when they're compiled, they're cleaned. So anything that is potentially a security problem is stripped directly out of the HTML, so it never actually gets rendered, even if the code is in the template.
Okay.
Once it gets whitelisted, that cleaning process just says, oh, well, this JavaScript is okay. We'll let
and
it
And how
through.
Do you get whitelist? What's the process for me to take a new widget?
It was only through internal channels.
Okay.
So it would be a special service that we would offer sponsors, in very special circumstances.
Okay, so if someone, say, Meebo wanted to have a Meebo Me widget instead of LiveJournal, they would come and talk to you guys and make sure that their widget code gets approved as the same best practices we were just talking about, and on top of that, best practices in security.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
But LiveJournal is coming under the same pressure from its user base that Typepad, you know, always had as well, which is the demand for features. Not just the demand from features for users, but the demand from the marketplace who want to reach the LiveJournal user base. So LiveJournal is expanding and changing its security policy. Not its security policy, but it's becoming more liberal in its willingness and openness to accept third-party content into journal space and into app space specifically. Journal space is still sacred, but within the app, that's live journal land, and within the, within that space, we're going to allow more and more widgets to be placed. And that actually, from the security standpoint, the way they address that is all widgets are wrapped in an iframe.
Okay.
And that provides the necessary kind of security sandbox for any JavaScript or Flash code that's running that gives at least the LiveJournal user base the confidence that third parties can't read the content on their page, will prevent and provide certain assurances that cross-site scripting exploits can't happen, et cetera.
Are there any current widgets for Vox?
All of Vox is a very closed, very controlled environment. So currently there are a number of widgets you can select to add to your sidebar. All of those are come out of the Vox system itself. It's just checkboxes. I know the Vox team, just like the LiveJournal team, just like Typepad, has the same pressure from the marketplace and has the same pressure from its user base to add widgets. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see widgets in Vox's future, but it's not a feature right now.
So you talked a lot about what people are demanding and wanting and adding. So from across these entire four products, what do you think are the things that people want that they're not getting now? What would they like to see in the future? From widget developers.
From widget developers. That's a good question. I think a lot of it is very much about what's hot right now. So a lot of it is very kind of, it's about being able to show off for a lot of our users in Typepad and Movable Typeland who live on the bleeding edge, who really want to show off, here are the cool services I'm using right now. These are the things I've recently discovered. So it's very kind of meme-y in that respect. But a lot of it is about, and this is true about blogging in general, it's about what am I doing? I mean, blogging is very much about kind of sharing what you're interested in. What are you reading? What are you listening to? So working with Last.fm and showing here are the last five CDs I listened to. What are the books I'm reading? So you see a lot of the most interesting content are people who are doing, who are pushing more and more mixed media out to blogs. That includes photos from Flickr, photos from whatever service you're using, music you're listening to, books you're reading, so on and so forth. Because really, people use widgets, I think, to again as a way of aggregating their life in one place. I should say, people use blogs to aggregate their life into a single destination.
Right, and widgets and feeds, etc., will just help aggregate that a little bit, a little bit more.
But my life online is very dispersed.
Sure,
I don't live exclusively in Vox. I'm all over the place.
You're
all
issuing
day
Twitters.
Long.
You're uploading photos to Flickr. You're doing stuff in Delicious, and so there's always something going on.
Right, but for me, I want to document that. I want to create a legacy and of what my life is and what my interests are. And for me, that's what my blog is. And I like to aggregate that all in one place, and that's the value I see widgets providing, is it allows me to kind of collect that all in one place.
Thanks, Bern. And if people want to learn more about widgets, should they join up with ProNet? What's the next step for people to get serious about Six Apart and widgets?
You can go to developers.sixapart.com. That will take you to the Six Apart developer site. There you can see the Typepad widget API is completely open and free to everyone. You don't need to email anyone. You can just get an API key and start building for creating widgets on movable type. You can optionally become a member of ProNet. ProNet is our developer community and professional community. There are lots of people there to answer questions and to help people get widgets deployed. You can also go to code.sixapart.com and see the plugins that are deployed and listed there. That's our open source code repository. So if you want a quick start and really want to borrow from plugins that have already developed widget technology, by all means, you know, go to code.sixapart.com and steal whatever you want.
Well, thanks. That's a lot of good information for people to get started, and hopefully we'll see more widgets to keep the masses happy.
You're welcome.
Thanks.